your connecting flight to get home, don't blame me, blame yourself. Don't blame the system, but blame yourself. So, if possible, if we can finish off at about 11:15, I would greatly appreciate that. And any other request that you would ask me in future, I would gladly consider. But if you drag the time too long, consider yourself out of favor with any further requests. Sorry, Honorable Ivan. Oh, okay. My name is Freddy Adams, who blew our introduction. From permanent representative from the Western Cape. I'm also the chairperson of the Committee on Economic Development, which comprises economic development, energy, and mineral resources. I'll start from my left. That you introduce yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Sam. Good morning. My name is Nampa Gorimbali. I'm from Limpopo province. Good morning. My name is Dave Avis. I'm from Housing. Good morning. I'm Elder from Lingen from the Eastern Cape.
Morning, Kenneth from
My name is Henry, I'm CEO and the Long for the Deputy Minister.
Okay. The people behind you there, Harry.
Sorry, it's not the fourth floor.
No, use the mic, please.
That's what the Deputy Minister.
Okay.
Before
the Minister, Deputy Minister introduced himself at the back there, man.
Good morning, I'm Lundi with Pele, the President of
Japan.
Good morning, Ali. Kilani Ali from South African Local Government Association.
And I'm from the MG.
My name is Barbara Thompson. I'm the Deputy Minister.
Nati Dipuo Peter, Minister of Energy.
The gentleman that has just put his cup down. That politician is never late. They are just delayed. So they were somewhere delayed. I don't know if they had to take a call from the Honorable Premier of the Western Cape, but apologies accepted from the lead. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, people always ask me, Minister, why I do let everybody in the committee introduce themselves, because I always say that I don't want to hear tomorrow read an unknown source or a reliable source that said that. If there's something that I can say, no, that one has been there, so that must be the reliable source or something. But, honorable members, we are here today to receive the briefing by the Department of Energy on the strategic plan. I don't know who of you have followed the recent debate yesterday of the department to the National Assembly. And as you could know, this is the department that has to deliver and that has to live up to the expectations of a lot of South Africans. And to live up to that, you could easily get a sense, if you went through the documents and studied the things, that the money that this department receives, Minister, is not adequate for you to deliver. But so far you have delivered on the scarce budget that you got, the minimal amount that you have received, you have delivered, and you have done wonderful in that regard. And there we must compliment you as the political leadership, you yourself and the Deputy Minister, and the DG with the accounting officer. I'm always saying that where there's a woman in power, you know, things happen. And with energy, it happens. So we want to thank you very much from our committee side, and we want to again pledge our committee's support and help and in assisting wherever we can to make this department one of the leading departments of delivery in South Africa. Minister, I know you've got limited time, and Deputy Minister.
Well, sorry to interrupt you, Chairperson, but I just wanted to check, can we understand from the NSLP whether all persons are represented, maybe the participants that finish part of the conference, how you work and your provinces, whether they are all represented, then we know where we were dealing with.
Well, all provinces are represented. We've got apologies from about three provinces, which is KwaZulu-Natal is here, Gauteng is not here, Free State is not here, Limpopo is here, Western Cape is here, Northern Cape is here, Eastern Cape is here, and Northwest is not here, and Mpumalanga is not here. So all provinces, all parties in the NCOP are represented, except the Independent Democrats. But they have joined up with the DA, so the DA also represents their interests. We've got the Democratic Alliance, we've got COPE, and the ANC is here. There's two of the ANC, three of the Democratic Alliance, and one of COPE. Lucky we are not voting today, otherwise the ANC would have been in trouble. Does that answer? Okay. Minister, I know you've got limited time, so let me hand over to you to do what you need to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I thought I saw the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee come in, or he was lost. Okay. But I think he will be joining. I can also recognize him whilst he's getting his way through. I'm here with the team from the department that is going to present to you the strategic plan of the department for 2011-2012. And I would believe that they are still very much heated up because this day comes just after the budget vote speech. But also, being a Friday, like you said, people are always heated up, and it was encouraging to see that the NCOP doesn't take late Thursday, they are Friday, so we are here to be able to engage with you. And unfortunately, like you indicated, we all have time constraints. It was not intended. Maybe at another stage we'll be able to come back to the select committee, because we believe this committee is a very important partner, especially in view of the fact that it is in this platform where we can also interface with local government, who is directly a constitutional partner in the mandate for, in particular, electricity provision in our communities. Chairperson, I would believe that it is important for me to raise the fact that in the last year I had to write to some of the mayors in relation to their slow spending on the INEP program. You would know that the INEP program is an intervention to be able to make sure that there's access, universal access to electricity for the poorest of the poor in particular. A lack of spending in that regard means that the people are not getting what is due to them. If I have to also quickly jump to another matter, Chairperson, you would know that municipalities at times decide to be elective in approaching matters related to free basic electricity. We had to intervene in a situation last year where in the Western Cape, in Cape Town in particular, they had decided that they're not going to budget for free basic electricity. And that is why I said that I'm very happy that we could have this particular platform, because it is through this platform that in engagement with municipalities as well as metro could then be able to happen. This is the structure in Parliament really that is focusing on actual service delivery. But also, Chairperson, I would believe that this is a correct platform to engage with matters related to what one of the officials in the department called electricity by political boundaries, which is the situation that prevailed in the province of KZN, where there was instances where in some municipalities services were provided on the basis of who you or which organization you belong to, which organization you are a member of, or which organization you support or you supported in an election. And we have since agreed with the Premier that this is a matter that we need to really focus on and deal with within this financial year. And I believe KZN is the one province that has got the highest that type of incidents, which we call the island. It's about, the DG will give the figures, was about 16,000. But we believe that with the support of the MEC for COCTA and traditional affairs in KZN, Nomusa Dube will be able to deal with this particular situation with the mayors in the various municipalities. Chairperson, there's another area that we are having massive impact in the lives of the people on, and it is the solar water heating system. But we have realized that we are going to hit a brick wall because of the budgetary constraints, like you've indicated. The uptake is really encouraging. The anticipation in the community is very high, and the expectation is also very high. So you would understand that they are getting impatient because they have already started seeing the benefits to those who have had access to this particular intervention. So we are engaging other stakeholders like the Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Economic Development, as well as the Department of Public Enterprises, which are equally probably your departments that you could also be engaging on to see what it is that they would be doing to support the department and ESCOM to realize this objective. The one other thing that I believe that we need the committee's support on is the rollout, which the Deputy Minister will be driving, of energy efficiency. Because without energy efficiency, we're not going to be able to assure South Africans that we'll always have access to electricity. So it is important that we increase the awareness around the need for us to save electricity. This would be combined with the challenge that we are faced with of electricity theft, but also the challenge of the theft of cables, because theft of cables equally creates a situation where people don't have access to services. So you would hear from the department in the presentation that DG would give an indication on how we are going to strengthen the legislative environment to deal with cable theft and electricity theft, so that it can be qualified as economic sabotage, because every week it's treated as petty theft, and it is that's why you'd find that people are not they don't see anything wrong in stealing electricity, because they just take it as it's like stealing a loaf of bread or stealing some lowly from the shop. Chairperson, you would also be aware that this is a committee that is very much interested in the electricity distribution infrastructure holdings phasing out, and I would believe that it is one area that we will be engaging you with on throughout the year, because it is important that we are helped to be able to establish the capacity in the department. But outside the capacity in the department for this function, we also need to make sure that we focus on the challenges that we have on the backlogs of the distribution infrastructure. So that is one area that we also believe is very important for us to be able to facilitate and enhance universal access. Chairperson, you would know that we have promulgated the integrated resource plan, which is the country energy mix plant. We are busy with the process of the development of the integrated energy plan strategy, which is then going to look at issues of energy infrastructure, but also looking at broadly the different energy sources and how we could be able to make it possible that we can also have on a reliable basis data related to energy provision and energy future in South Africa. We would also be looking at a very important aspect, Jefferson, which if you have followed the speech in the House, we would have mentioned, which is the role of the National Oil Company, strengthening and repositioning Petro SA, so as to be able to take its rightful place as a state-owned company that drives oil and gas in this country. But also the future of Petro SA is bright, because we believe that there is ventures that they are getting into that would assure them feedstock to keep the GPL plant going. But we also believe that there are other initiatives, like for example the study that we are busy still doing on the project in Tombo that we need to finalize so that we can then take a decision about building the refinery. But we also know that we are busy to unbundle the Central Energy Fund. We have already started, because you know the African Exploration, African AEFMC. Yes.
Exploration Mining.
Yes, that company. We are delinking it from Central Energy Fund so that it forms the nucleus that would then be able to build or create the state-owned mining company. And we are also looking at other subsidiaries of SEF to be able to put them together so as to strengthen their output and be able to get better efficiencies from them. But I believe that the department is yet to meet its objective, except that we are challenged with the necessary financial as well as human capital. Human capital, because as we speak, the department is just about 52% populated, and you would realize that that 42% is overstretched. It at times has to cover in areas where we have not been able to fill up the post as yet. But we are busy engaging with the Department of Public Service and Administration to approve the final structure and be able to fill the post. As you have seen, we have started advertising some of the posts. But I would believe that this department is one of the departments that leads by example. The President has gender-wise empowered this department. We've got a minister as a woman, a DM who's a woman, the DG is a woman, one of the DDGs, two of the DDGs are women, and the department is actually 60% women driven. So it means, they say if you want work to be done, give it to women, and it means we're really putting that to practice. Thank you,
Chairperson. Thank you very much, Minister. That is, I see Honorable Van Lingen is smiling broadly. The conference between the ANC and the PA, can we just stop the conference or dialogue or coalition? You are going to want to form. Oh, okay. Well, the best thing about this department is that the money has also been handled by a woman, so that is, and they know how to work the first thing. No, thank you, Minister. After the Deputy Minister's input, colleagues, I will give you time to engage the Minister and Deputy Minister before we release them. The DG will then take us through the presentation. Deputy Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very short because the Minister has almost covered everything. But just to say that the NCOP is a very powerful instrument that we could use as a department to lobby for us. You know, we always think that committees are, you know, they are not better placed to do lobbying. But I think the NCOP is better placed to do the lobbying. For instance, with the budget committee, when it comes to budgeting, we would have heard that we are expected to deliver more, but the capacity to deliver is not equal to the budget. So we would ask you people to engage with committees like the budget committee and, you know, push for the correct budget to be allocated to the Department of Energy. On the issue of capacity, also the minister has mentioned that we are also expected to deliver, but in terms of resources, when it comes to staff, we are also having a challenge with that as well. But also, I would also ask you, as the MCLP, that it would be important that you take what we said yesterday in our budget speeches, and you push us to make sure that those things that you mentioned there are done. For instance, if we go to our public participation, those relevant members of those relevant provinces should be part of those participation programs that we take to the people. I know I've served in the MCLP, and usually when the department goes, the member stays behind, then you are not, you know, in touch of what is actually being done by the department. So I just would like to urge that you become part of those programs as well. Thanks.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Let me also take this opportunity in welcoming a gentleman who has joined us. And I'm going to welcome him after he said his name and where he comes from, the ID number, and all the other preferences we can leave for another day. Honorable Sikalana, just introduce yourself to us, please.
Yeah, my name is Susan Sikalana. I'm from the National Assembly, which is our empire here, which is invaded without my permission. But I came to pledge solidarity and just to refresh myself from that place, now that we have approved the budget for the budget. Thank you, Gabriela.
No, thank you, Honorable Zikilana. Now, for those of you that doesn't know, Honorable Zikilana is the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Energy. So we thank you very much for the support. We've got a very good working relationship, Minister, the two of us. We don't wait for committee meetings and that. We sometimes meet outside of that. Now, colleagues, as you know, that the Minister was Premier before. Her life now is Minister, and she was also then the second rotating Deputy Chairperson of the NCOP. The Deputy Minister was in the term of 1999 up until 2004, part of the establishment of the NCOP as a member. I can recall clearly that the time the NCOP was refurbished, she was my benchmate. And, you know, she used to got us into a lot of trouble with the then chairperson, Comrade Nandedi Pando. Comrade Pando would used to discipline us and Minister. Between the Deputy Minister, Dorothy Maslangu, and Femi Matadina, and Beauty. You know, I was in the middle between them, and then I also always got the blame because they are women, and the chairperson is a woman, so never blame them, always me. So, that was good days. Thank you very much. Honourable Members, I'll allow you now to engage the Minister and the Deputy Minister. Are there any hands? Nothing. Oh, Honourable Lee, Honourable Sinclair, Honourable Zikilana there. Honourable Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the Minister and Deputy Minister, thank you for being with us this morning. It's indeed good that Ministers and Deputy Ministers are showing an interest in the select committees, which is not always the case. So very encouraging to have you with us, and thank you for the input. I just want to highlight and agree with you with regard to KZN, my province. There is this unfortunate basis of political affiliation which comes into service delivery in our province. And I hope that MEP Dulwe is able to stop this practice. I'll give you an example. The week before the election, the ANC published an advert in the Raisman Gazette threatening a lack of service delivery to a particular ward if that ward didn't support the ANC candidate. So I'm encouraged by those words. Thank you very much. The issue of solar water heaters is indeed one which is a bit of a tiger let out of its cage now, because we've started to put a few of these water heaters out there, and they are fantastic, and it's great service delivery. But as you say, the expectations are enormous. We have millions of people who, as yet, have not been provided with housing, and yet others have got housing and are getting solar water heaters. I mean, this is a huge challenge for us in the country, and we need to somehow, as you appear to be doing, bringing in other departments and resources to try and meet these expectations. I hope that the expectations don't boil over into unpleasant circumstances. The motives are fantastic. I think it's a great program, but perhaps we need to now ensure that the delivery of these solar water heaters takes place on the bank, unfortunately, of a huge housing bank. So you know, I'm really concerned about that. And so I'm pleased to hear that some sort of plans are being made. And I know that housing is not your mandate. However, people out there look at service delivery as a whole. They don't look at it departmentally. So once again, thank you for being with us this morning. We do appreciate it.
Thanks, Honourable Sinclair.
Okay, thank you. I just want to start with a procedural matter. Firstly, I think we must respect the institutions that you create and the structures. And I'm happy that the chairperson of the inlay committee is here, but to my best understanding, this is not a joint committee. It's specifically a committee of the NCOP, the select committee. So I'm not so sure what is the status, but I'm of the view and opinion that this is the next one. You know, see the DA always interrupts, you know, but I'm not so sure that that's procedurally that correct. But the people with the knowledge to comment about that. But my opinion would be respecting that the next committee is not the same committee. Be it as my chairperson, I want to thank the minister and the deputy minister that they're here. And it's a privilege to have them here. I just want to raise three issues. The first issue is the one about energy certainty in the future. And we had the privilege to go to St. Vincent and engage various activities in the community there and so on. I'm contrary to some of the other members around the table, I'm a very strong motivator to say that not just in South Africa but in the world, nuclear energy must be part of the solution. Despite the disaster that happened and with the tsunami and the very recent. So the first issue, and I suppose it will come out in the presentation maybe later, but from a policy perspective, I just want to hear from the ministry, what is the government's intention to address the issue about energy certainty in the future, also including nuclear? That is the first one. The second one is the issue about alternative energy and the green economy. I must say that I was the only member of parliament, or the only member of, except the minister was there that attended the solar park launch in Uppington. And not because I'm from the Northern Cape, but I honestly believe that is the way to go. It was a very good intention and a very good idea. But after that that process is now almost 9 months away, maybe a year and five. I'm concerned that there's not enough movement on that issue. And it's exactly to do with the next issue that I want to raise, and that's the Lippert model. Now, if you read the magazine, the Mining Weekly, and all these other things, and you go onto the internet, the investors are very skeptical about investing purely because of the Lippert model. And I know that there was a lot of discussion and interaction publications by the minister and the official, so maybe Jefferson and the minister can just take us to that where we stand today. So, there's a number of other issues and so on, but for now I will let my next question.
Well, thank you very much, I'm looking clear. Well, I think the aspect of the procedure is that, first of all, we are all members of Parliament, and Honourable Vikilana is a member of Parliament. Although we are a select committee, and the chairperson of the portfolio committee, portfolio committee and select committee, sometimes we accept joint committees, we do visit each other's committees in that. And as a member of Parliament, I think we're entitled also to ask a question in that. But I think you've got much indulgence, Honourable Sinclair, that you will allow Honourable Vikilana to also participate. I see that you are in coalition and working coalition with the DA. Do you want us to ask them as well? Or Honourable Lee, do you have a problem?
Chairman, that's an unfair question. And then I choose not to answer it. Thank you.
But, I'll allow the Honourable Member to just ask a question. Honourable Vikala.
Chairperson, I really trust and hope that there isn't anything unprocedural about my participation here. I know I have a right to come and speak to part of Galari, but I really have no intention to flout any procedure. Just really in keeping with our spirit of working as a team of committees that handle energy in both houses, that are all. I really would definitely apologize if it is found later on that there was any procedure flouted on this. But in any case, mine was just a very humble question about the position of the Western Cape province on the Free Basic Electricity. The minister did mention that I just wanted a little bit of an elaboration by that.
Just before the minister and the minister responds, now, Honourable Sinclair, we have checked it now with the procedural office. Secretary went out to check it. There is no breach of procedural offence to that effect. He may participate, but he can't vote. He may participate, but he cannot vote. And the DA has overruled you on that, Honourable Sinclair, your senior partner in coalition. So, yeah, thank you for that. Minister?
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I must start with the question by the chair of the portfolio committee about the position of the Western Cape. The situation here is I don't think it's a position of the Western Cape as a province. It was unfortunately the events of the 18th changed the composition of the municipality, but the previous mayor of Cape Town, who wrote to Eskom to indicate that they cannot budget for free basic electricity and they cannot participate in that regard. And I actually engaged him, and he then indicated that he is going to attend to the matter and reverse the process between them and Eskom. He was looking at it as a austerity measure to say, don't give the poorest of the poor free electricity, rather use that money for something else. So I think that is something that he could have attended to. He
the then Alderman Plato was the one, because now we've got a new situation in Cape Town. I wouldn't know, I haven't met the new mayor. The energy set, oh, let me go to the first one. No, I agree fully with the honorable member from KZN about the unfortunate situation of political affiliation. But that's one of the adverts. I don't know. It was the heat of the election. I can't get involved in it. I'm talking about actual situations of services in the sector that I'm leading, where we have proof that people have been jumped. And almost like the contractor taken by hand, taken to particular houses, not this one, this one, this one. That one was something that then, that's why I did indicate that Blessing Gwala, the then mayor of the district, knew about it. The former mayor of the district of, municipality of Abakulu and others knows about it. Even the area in Gwavuma, they know about it. There are quite a number of incidents that we can mention, but it was the services, not the intention not to deliver. The services were not delivered. And the other one, it's very interesting that you raised about people having houses and getting solar water heating. We have met the type of situations where people are saying, but this is not fair, why don't you rather use that money? But you remember that this solar water heating program actually came about as a result of the challenges of security of supply, to be able to make sure that we also get involved on the demand side management process, to make sure that people don't use too much electricity to heat water. But we then took a decision that it can just not be the higher LSMs that have got access to solar water heating, because there is the, which one is it, the subsidy one, which is driven by ESCOM, and this one was the fiscal one, to be able to make sure that the department participates actively in making it possible that we bring down the amount of electricity used just to boil water. In the morning, even the poorest of the poor, you would know the amount of electricity they would use to boil water to have a bath, even if it is in a small basin. So we wanted to deal with that particular situation. With the Department of Human Settlement, we have an agreement that going forward, every house that is built must have access to solar water heating, so as to be able to make sure that it is a comprehensive package that is provided to the household. And they've already even started addressing the issue of electrification, where they're putting in together with the municipalities, and I want to thank those municipalities that have gone the extra mile in the INEP program to create a situation where they wire the houses so that when connectivity comes, you don't have people who have only the light where the box is, and they don't have the light in the whole house. They've been able to stretch the hand of the department even further as municipalities to be able to make sure that the communities have good quality, a dignified service. So I think that one we're trying to address it. Energy certainty. Mr. Sinclair, honorable member, I'm sure we have indicated, and this committee is one of the committees that benefited from the presentation on the integrated resource plan. That instrument, that plan gives you an indication on how serious we take energy security. And I believe that the fact that we are working now on a comprehensive integrated energy plan gives you that assurance that we assist with the responsibility to make sure that there's energy certainty. The first line of energy certainty was taken by the President to create a standalone Department of Energy. That in itself was the highest political will to make sure that there is energy certainty. So it is now our responsibility to make sure that we've got the necessary instruments, we've got the necessary resources to make it possible that we could be able to assure South Africans about security of energy. And the IRP is a living document, we said. It is, we are able to review it at intervals. The DG would say 2 years at times. At times it would be 3 years, depending on the processes also for the MYPD process. So I think it is important that we really give this integrated resource plan a chance to survive and give it, because we have the first one, which is the IRP, the one, which we then ended up with the 2013 indicators. And you would remember the extensive consultation that we were engaged in with this one. And to an extent where labor, as well as the network process, I would say, made a special appeal to the Deputy President to say, can we postpone or delay the promulgation of the IRP? We would have done it last year. But we did it now in March, 6 months down the line, because of the request from labor and business. Labor saying we want to look at the energy carriers in the way in which they can be able to protect the jobs, to make it possible that we sustain the jobs that we have across the value chain for all the energy carriers. But also, the business saying we want to be able to anticipate potential investment, whether there would be room and space for participation by local business as well as investors. How do we realize localization so that there is manufacturing and there is beneficiation of the necessary minerals or whatever that needs to be, would that would be the primary energy sources, so that South Africa can benefit from the total frame. So those are the things that we allowed for as a sector, because I would remember the Deputy President even said we need to hurry up slowly so that we can then take everybody on board. We shouldn't leave anybody behind, because this is a country plan. And if it is a country plan, then everybody has got the right to feel that I have made my input. So let us not be impatient with business and labor. Let's create the space. And we created the space. That's why we only promulgated it, and I mean passed it in cabinet on the 16th. We all agree, and I'm happy that even in the House yesterday, parties were all at one to say nuclear is one of the equations in the energy plan. And I think what you are saying is just amplifying that, including the input about solar. The department will speak more about the solar park and the research, because it is important in the strat plan and in the speech they would be able to give, in the statement they will be able to give you exact indications of what, where exactly we are in relation to the research, as well as the different stages of the solar park process. Yeah, I think that is where we are, and if there's anything the Deputy Minister can respond to some of the issues. I didn't hear well about statements, and but
no, I think you've covered all. Besides the solar park, which then said the department will cover that.
No, thank you very much, Minister and Deputy Minister, honourable members. Minister, Deputy Minister, we want to thank you once again for your availability. We know that you've got pressing time and need, and without any further delay, we will release you if you want to go. If you want to stay with us, that's also fine, but it's up to you. And like I said, we know you've got some pressing needs, but thank you for putting the committee before anything else this morning, and for attending. We want to wish you well in your endeavors, and be assured of the support of the Committee on Economic Development with your endeavors. Thank you very much.
Just before we move on, just to say to the Portfolio Committee members that we do have a very open door policy. At any time, members can come and consult on any issue, and we are willing to engage, you know, even not from a committee member. We are free to do that.
Manifest? Something you want to say?
No, the PM.
Okay. Honourable members, we will now excuse and the department. We will now excuse the Minister and the Deputy Minister. As I said, it was other engagement. But thank you very much for coming, Minister and Deputy Minister. And we'll now hand over to the DG. DG, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chair Trustee.
Don't you want to give us just 2 seconds, DG, because I see the technology, they're still battling with it. And while we just wait for the Deputy Minister and Minister to depart. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I'm going to proceed while they are still working on the technology, and I'm hoping that everybody has got a printed copy. Chairperson, the structure of the presentation is as follows. We are going to reflect on our performance against the 2010 State of the Nation Address, and we're going to also indicate what informs our strategic plan, and we're going to outline our objectives, and then I'll request my colleagues from various branches to make a presentation in that regard, taking into consideration some of the questions that were raised around the retreat and solar park scheme. Now, Chairperson, if we go to the third slide simply just indicates our mandate, our mission, our vision 2014 in line with the current administration, and our vision 2025 in line with the national plan. As you are aware, the national plan is the vision 2025. In terms of the performance, against the 2010 objective, members will recall that the department, together with the industry and also municipalities and ESCOM, coordinated efforts to ensure that there was an interrupted energy supply. And as the members will recall, that actually happened. And in terms of the electrification of households, we had made a commitment of 150,000 households, and we managed to do 195,479, and we exceeded the target by 45,479. And the president directed that we table the independent system and market operator bill to ensure that we enable the independent power producers into our energy market. And this was done. The cabinet approved the bill, and we are now proposing it to table it in parliament before the deadline of, I think it's 3rd of June. So we intend to do that. Now, in terms of what, we should go to slide number 5. What informed our threat plan? Our threat plan was informed by the following. It was the State of the Nation Address 2011, the government outcome as outlined by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. And out of those 12 outcomes, our minister has signed 6 of those outcomes. And also, it was informed by the outcome-based strategic planning approach of government, but also we had to evaluate our energy environment, and also, of course, the resources in terms of organizational structure. So all these issues informed our strategic plan. Now, what we did then, we went to analyze the State of the Nation Address of 2011, and in the State of the Nation Address, the following issues were raised. The emphasis on the need to create jobs, the focus on energy efficiency, service delivery with electrification focus, rural development, and the partnership with private and public sector institutions, and our participation in the international arena. Now, if I can just take you through what government outcomes that direct impact on the Department of Energy. Having said that, all the 12 outcomes, energy has a contribution one way or the other. But the ones that we focus on in our strategic plan, where the minister signed the delivery agreement, are outcome 4, which refers to the decent employment through inclusive economic growth. The outcome number 6, which is an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure. and as it pertains to the energy infrastructure. Outcome 8, which is the sustainable human settlement and improved quality of our household life. You heard Minister referring to the issues around human settlement and what we need. In other words, you want to provide a settlement that has got complete services, of which energy is part of. And of course, the environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. So those are the four government outcomes where we have signed the delivery agreement. But Minister also included two others recently, which was the one on higher education and also on health. Those ones are not included here because that was, she signed those after we prepared the strategic plan. Now, in terms of the approach we adopted, I've already referred to the outcomes-based approach as it's shown in slide number 8. Now, if we're going to go to the situational analysis in slide number 10 of the energy environment, where to look what are the challenges that we have in the service delivery arena. And what we realize is that we definitely have a problem with the declining electricity generation capacity. The fleet that we have is old and is also not very, very clean. Because if you recall, the members, that 88% of our energy generated is generated from coal. So we need them. We have to make sure then that we deal with those challenges in our planning, but also the issue of making sure that we bring more capacity online was also important, and we need to fast track that. And also, government has given us a target of 90% distribution, or rather 92% access to affordable energy services by 2014. At the moment, we're sitting just above 75%. And then, if maybe I can just indicate that you'll hear a different figure. Has indicated that it's 80%, but our actual connections, in other words, legal connections, indicate that it's 75%. So it means that we've got about at least 5% more of illegal connected individuals, or individuals who have not been identified to be there. So 75% is what is legally can be counted. And then, of course, the stability of the electricity distribution infrastructure and its financial impact. Also, we had to look at other issues on slide 11 around the issue of the service delivery environment, the growing demand for the energy resources as the economy comes out of the recent crisis, the constraints on the supply of liquid fuel, especially to the economic hub of the inland, the impact of job losses and the urgent need to implement programs that are labor intensive. Also, we had to look at fast-tracking the introduction of clean energy, and also the fact that we are hosting COP17 by the end of this year. So those are the issues that we had to consider in our planning. Now, in terms of the partnerships that we are looking at in the energy sector, in slide 12. But those partnerships are both multilateral, and they include, amongst others, for example, on the Sustainable Energy and Climate Change Forum, we have to deal with the Institute of the UN, and also the Carbon Sequestration Leadership Forum. And we need to deal with the Clean Energy Ministerial, CEM, IRENA, which is an organization that focuses on promotion of renewable energy. But in terms of skills and capacity, we also have a number of partnerships with countries like China, Japan, and also the International Energy Agency, and the International Atomic Energy Agency. So those are the areas where we do our skills and capacity. In fact, on Monday and Tuesday, there is going to be a conference that is going to be hosted by IAEA to enhance the skills in the energy sector, specifically planning in Africa. And this is to host the KMKTA. And then also on issues of funding, those are the institutions that you look at, China, EU, France, etc. In terms of bilateral, we've got quite a number of countries which we have got bilateral with. And in the nuclear space, we have got quite a number of countries that we also have interactions with. And as much as we are not an all-producing country, and however we want to have an impact or influence some of the activities in the African continent, so therefore we are part of the African Petroleum Producers Association, APA. And then of course on the electricity side, we seek to enhance connectivity in SADC. And then on the oil and gas sector, those are the countries that we have relationships with. Now, in terms of the organizational environment, the capacity challenges are well documented. If I can just request members to correct the 65% into 52% of the departmental structure. And then, of course, we have looked at our strategic objectives, which our old strategic objectives, and we make sure that they talk to the new environment that I have just referred to. Now, in terms of the policy development and reviews during 2012, it is our intention to look at the National Energy Regulator Act to improve the governance. We're looking at the Electricity Regulation, if you can correct that, please. Electricity Regulation Act, number 4 of 2006, to provide for expropriation, licensing, penalties, and already Minister has alluded to also electricity theft. And also the Petroleum Products Act as amended to address the number of regulatory gaps. The Gas Act, to include some of the gases, in fact, I suppose, methane, and also maybe if the shale comes into play, probably also will have to be included. And of course, the independent and sustainable market operator. Chairperson, that's basically the overview from my side, and I'll then request the CFO to take us through the actual facts and figures. Thank you.
Unspent budget. The top three would be INET and the SOE, that's 120 million, electricity 23 million, hydrocarbons 8 million. The next slide, please. On the slide, we tell you the transfers and subsidies of 141 million that was not transferred, and here it's made up of INET of 114 million, RESCO 20, and EDI 5 million. Under the compensation of employees, of the 485, that's go back. The jumping is under cooking services, we have 15 million that was sold unspent as we closed the year end, and 1.6 million in capital assets. The major items and the goods and services that we spent for the financial year that just ended was travel and subsistence, which made up 33% of our spend, which was 30.3 million. Operating leases was 25%, that's estimated to around 22 million. Consultancy fees was roughly around 7% and 6.6 million. Those are the top three spenders apart from the compensation of employees. This slide shows the possible rollovers that we have requested for from the year end that just ended. Of the 158 million that was possibly, that could have been rolled over, we have motivated for 100.4 million. The balance of the 58 million could not be rolled forward, as it was a roll forward from the previous year, and that was for non-grid. The balance has been motivated for. Next slide, please. This slide shows the breakdown of budget allocated by program till 2014, covering the NTF cycle. I won't go through individually because we have the slides in front of us. The next slide. The only significant change here is to transfer, which was increased by 395 million. The biggest contributor to that was the local organizing committee, and that was for the FIFA World Cup expenses of 282 million. The next one was to INEF for non-grid of 53 million, and then ESCOM for electricity demand side management of 36 million. That's the only change on that, a significant change. The next slide shows the major programs and projects and the ENE allocation. This slide shows the current payments and shows the breakdown between salaries, compensation of employees, goods and services, and the total current payments. Salaries increased by 33.8 million, that is to take into account the inflation and a little bit of structure adjustment. For 2011-12, only 4.8% is used for operational costs. The balance goes to transfers and subsidies. Yes, the costing of the DOE establishment structure is by a program, and the highest here is going to energy regulation and administration, which takes into account the ministry, the deputy ministry, the DG's office, the COO's office, corporate services and finance takes the major portion of this cost. From here on, it's a breakdown by program, and the breakdown is by the cost of the employees, goods and services, transfers and subsidies, payments of capital assets, and then financial assets down. And I think here it's just the movement between the compensation of employees, and the reason for the difference is the establishment of the Deputy Minister's office. The next one was energy policy and planning. The drop in the compensation of employees is mainly due to the funding was originally allocated for the expansion of the Chief Directorate of Energy Planning, but this budget was redirected following the revised and approved establishment of the department. The previous year's budget was based on the former DNE structures, hence the movement now. And then under transfer, it's the transmitted pipeline, which is 4.5 billion, split over 3 years, and 2012-13 is the last year, and each year we allocate 1.5 billion. Under energy regulation, the compensation of employees increased by 7 million, mainly due to the additional funding for the petroleum compliance and monitoring function. Goods and services dropped by a corresponding 7 million to cater for the increase in salary costs. Transfers increased by 66 million, which will be allocated mainly to the municipalities for electricity efficiency and demand management. That will be around 60 million. Program 4 There's a marginal movement in compensation of employees and goods and services, mainly due to inflation adjustments. Transfers increased by 323 million, which will be payable, as I mentioned earlier on, to the local organizing committee for the FIFA World Cup expenses. Additional payments would be done to Eskom and municipality for INEP. Okay, the last program, Program 5, compensation increased by 3 million, mainly due to the inflation adjustments and some additional costs. Goods and services increased by 2.7 million, and that as well is mainly due to international membership fees. Transfers and subsidies increased by 6.2 million, and I think the increase will just go to mostly to the Nuclear Energy Corporation and the National Nuclear Regulator. Finally, the slide gives you a breakdown of the transfers and subsidies for the entire Department of Energy. Of the 6.6 billion that we received this year, 95% of that budget goes for transfers to the municipalities and SOEs, and the remaining 5% is the operational cost for the department. Under local government, the allocation will increase by 137 million, mainly going for INEP, that's roughly around 120 million, the balance for electricity demand side management. Projects and programs increased by 282 million. The biggest recipients will be INEP again, Renewable Energy Subsidy Scheme, INEP for Eskom, and Electricity Demand Side Management, Eskom again. And the entities reporting to the Minister, EDI, due to the winding up, has decreased substantially. And I think that's about it on this slide.
That's all for my side. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much, Professor, honorable members. I'm now going to present the program for the Hydrocarbons and Energy Planning branch of the department, starting off with the highlights. And I must indicate there that two of the performance highlights actually belong to my colleague, Mr. Hane. So I've already...
Sorry, TGG. Honorable members and staff, let me apologize for the Icelandic weather that or aircon that we received here, but they are attending to it. We have asked them to attend to it. Because it's worse than the North Pole on over the valley. We can't allow you to get sick now. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think in terms of the highlights for 2010, the DG has already given the overall highlights for the department. The one thing that we embarked upon last year was a program to develop a regulatory account, and that is a program that is going to reward investors in the liquid fuels value chain for the investments that they make. Currently, the system we believe is not on a very sound scientific basis, so we developed a set of accounts and agreed those accounts with the industry as to what will be rewarded, and what now we are working on is actually the implementation of the outcomes of that system. The second highlight was the promulgation of the LPG price regulation. And in terms of that, we had to wait until after the World Cup because we didn't want to disrupt any distribution during the World Cup. And so those regulations were promulgated in August last year. And we believe that through that price intervention, actually, we've managed to put back in the hands of the consumers
200 million, in excess of 200 million actually. And we are actually looking at the further improvements to the pricing system, looking at other areas in the value chain where we believe that we can actually trim some more fat in order to encourage the growth of LPG. Also, the discussion paper on fuel specifications was published, and we've now received all the comments from all the stakeholders, and we are now going to be finalizing that, and that will set the stage then for the refurbishment of refineries in order for them to be able to produce cleaner fuel. We also developed regulations for strategic stocks that are going to be maintained by the oil companies. This was a draft that was published, but of course here what we are waiting for now is for an approval of the strategic stocks policy by cabinet in order for those regulations to be finalized, because we need a mandate first from cabinet in order to finalize the actual regulation. The next two bullets, Mr. Apane will talk to a bit later, but also just to indicate to the members that the South African National Energy Development Institute was actually established during the course of last year. It was listed by the Minister of Finance, and basically now they are an entity that we are busy, the minister will be appointing a board of SANEDI, and SANEDI now will then be responsible for, amongst others, running with the energy efficiency program of the country. In terms of policy development, I think the DG has touched upon the two acts, bills basically that will be brought in front of Parliament during the course of the year. The first one, basically what we are looking for there is penalties for non-compliance with the Petroleum Products Act, because we believe that the current penalties are insufficient as a disincentive for people to comply. The one other issue we'll be looking at is some implementation of some kind of spot sanctions, which may not necessarily include fines, but would include, for example, interventions in the operation of the various entities. Then in terms of the Gas Act, the DG elaborated on that. For example, the LNG, import of LNG is not adequately covered in the Gas Act because at the time it was not something that was envisaged in 2001. Compressed natural gas is also not covered, and this is an area that we are looking at very closely. Going on to the next slide, the focus then on the other programs. As Minister indicated, we have started working on the integrated energy planning strategy. That strategy, our aim for this year is to make sure that the cabinet actually approves the strategy, and that we have an energy modeling system that is also operational. And we will, in all of this, be engaging in extensive public stakeholder workshops. As was indicated by the Minister, the Integrated Energy Plan will then look at energy planning holistically, covering basically all forms of energy, and looking at the best option for the best for each of the uses of energy in the country. Now, in terms of fuel specifications, I've touched on the fact that we've published the discussion paper, and then we are working now to actually promulgate the regulations that flow from that discussion document. One outstanding matter, which I need to indicate here, is actually how, because industry has indicated to us that for them to make those investments into producing cleaner fuel, they need some kind of assurance that they will be rewarded. Now, what we're engaged in with National Treasury, as well as the Department of Trade and Industry, is to look at the form of those, some kind of cost recovery. What can the motorists basically pay for, and what will then be expected for the you know, private sector to actually cover in order to be able to produce those fuels. That is quite actually a daunting task, but we believe that we are on top of it. And then in terms of switching the thermal applications, we believe that people should actually stop using, to a large extent, electricity for cooking and heating. And we, through the price regulation last year, we saw, particularly in certain provinces, one of them being the Western Cape, the growth of LPG in this province has actually been phenomenal. And I think partly it has been driven by the price interventions that were made by the department. Now, what we are developing is a national strategy that will actually, to a large extent, try and replicate some of the market success that we've seen in some of the areas. I think it has grown quite phenomenally also in Gauteng, but we believe that we should be able also to reach some of the other provinces. And one way of doing that is to consider some form of you know, incentive in terms of the manufacturing of cylinders in the country, because one of the things that make LPG unaffordable is actually the cost of cylinders. And linked to that then would be the cost of steel. And I think it's appropriate for us to be talking to this committee about that, because we would need, for the strategy to be successful, the Department of Trade and Industry, in terms of looking at some kind of dispensation for steel that will be used for manufacturing of cylinders, in order for those cylinders to be manufactured locally. When you talk to the manufacturers, they then indicate that they would bring manufacturing to the country, but the cost of steel is actually prohibitive. And this is one of the issues that the strategy then will be talking to. Then in terms of fuel, the strategic stocks, I think the events in the Middle East and North Africa recently do actually point to a need for us to look at some kind of strategic stock reserve, particularly not only for oil, but also for petroleum products. And now the strategic stock policy that we are developing, which is in the final stages, because we've reached now agreement with the National Treasury on how to proceed on this matter, will basically try and, as much as possible, to increase the level of crude oil stocks that we have in the country, so that should there be any disruption in the supply market, then we're able then to keep the wheels of the economy turning. But that is going to require quite a bit of investment by all of us basically in the infrastructure that will be used to house fuel stocks. Fortunately, in Saldanha, we already have the facility, which is basically unequaled other than in the U.S. in terms of capacity as a single storage facility for crude oil. So I think we will have to look at increasing the use of that facility for strategic stocks going forward. As I said, the regulatory accounting system was completed, and basically now what we are discussing with industry is the determination of the margins for each of the activities in which they invest, as to what kind of margins then are going to be applicable for rewarding that investment. An area that we believe that we should accelerate is the development of a pricing framework for biofuels. Again, addressing the issue that was raised earlier about energy security, because we believe that by expanding biofuels production in the country, we are actually adding to energy security. One of the issues that is still subject to debate currently is the maize and other staple foods. As the members would remember, in the initial strategy, maize was excluded, primarily because of the potential impact on food prices. But of course, the stakeholders, particularly the agricultural Agri-SA, they actually indicate that they don't see, from their perspective, a major impact. But that will have to be subjected to some kind of study to see whether the maize surplus can then be used, for biofuel. No decisions have been taken on this matter. We will have to consult the Department of Agriculture in this regard, as well as Water Affairs, because they do have some concerns about the impact of biofuels, the cultivation of these crops that will be used for biofuels and their impact on water usage in the country. Then another area that we'll be focusing on is the one where we have had some successes last year, the integrated energy centers. We had one where we partnered with SACO last year, and that IEC was actually started, constructed, and completed last year. The IEC is next to a school in Kunu, in the Eastern Cape, and basically it also has a computer center with internet facilities, and it is used by members of the community, particularly the students. There are two more IECs that are planned for this year, and now the choice of areas where these IECs are is also determined by the levels of traffic volume. So we target areas where normally the oil companies would not generally go and put up a service station. So sometimes we get asked questions about why are there no IECs in particular provinces, and that's because of the coverage. For example, Gauteng being one of the provinces where we don't believe that at this stage there is a justifiable need for an IEC. In terms of the charter, the liquid fuel charter, basically this year the focus would be looking at a new framework for empowerment, because we have they completed now the review of compliance with the existing charter. And I can indicate that the outcome are a bit disappointing for us. We would have expected that we would have covered a lot more ground than we have covered. But the outcome, I think, will be released by the minister and the DG in the near future. I think there is basically a duplication there in terms of the regulatory accounting system. I will skip that. Then indicate that we are developing a 20-year liquid fuels infrastructure roadmap. This again in response to the concerns that we have about energy security. One of the things that EFSA should indicate, Chair, is that in as far as the area of crude oil, there's been a complete reversal globally. And that reversal has got implications, major implications at that. About 25 years ago, the major oil companies had control of about 60% of the world's oil reserves. The Shells and BPs and you know, all the major oil companies of the world, ExxonMobil and so on. Currently, 80% of the world's oil reserves are in the hands of national oil companies owned by governments of the oil producing countries. Only about 18% of the world's oil is in the hands of the international oil companies. So it's a complete reversal. Now that complete reversal has got some implications. And these are the implications that inform how we then approach. Because there are some questions, for example, about why do you need a strong national oil company? Well, we need it simply because the people who now control crude oil reserves are themselves having national oil companies, and they prefer dealing with other national oil companies than international oil companies as we know them. So this is a dynamic that we find ourselves in, and we have to adjust as a country. And so the role, for example, of a PetroSA, I think is quite critical. Because whenever you engage government in countries where there is oil, they will then always say, well, do you have a national oil company? And how strong is your national oil company? And so on. Hence the need to strengthen PetroSA. So the 20-year infrastructure roadmap will talk to all those issues as well. Now I think that the rest of the slides really talk to statistics, and I think the only thing I can just indicate that members may be concerned about the reduction in the inspection. The reduction is informed by the budget. That we have. Realistically, we cannot cover the same ground with the kind of budget that we have. However, what we then said is that after each inspection, we will ensure that we have maximum coverage so that even those areas that we don't go to, people know that you know, this was the outcome in that service station, and therefore, if they come to me, this may be the outcome. And we believe that by doing that, then, you know, the other players will know that we have, you know, the regulator has got keys. The rest is really applications that were accepted per province. then the IDCs that have lands also have provinces. And really the last slide talks to the challenges and really it's, as I said, the whole issue of liquid fuels, particularly crude oil, and as I indicated, insufficient funding. Thank you.
If I may continue from where my colleague left off, I will also address the questions around the solar park and the update on the renewable energy fit in tariff program. If I can start on slide number 20, on page 23. Regarding our objectives, is that we're wanting to monitor development, but we're also wanting to, or rather so as to improve and implement appropriate policies in order to govern the sector. We also have a massive program to increase access to the electricity, which is the electrification program. We outline in the program, so on that next slide, that we are involved in, including solar water heating, INEP, the Integrated National Electrification Program, Integrated Resource Planning, Independent System and Market Operator Process, the introduction of independent power producers, the REFIT program, which is the renewable energy side of independent power producers, and then the energy efficiency aspect, in particular the campaign and awareness building, and then nuclear safeguards and the nuclear power build program, which we call the integrated transaction. Starting with solar water heating, our intention for the financial year up to the end of March is to install 250,000 new systems. I must indicate this is not a cumulative number. This is completely standalone from last financial year. We intend to address some of the problems that have been identified in relation to the solar water heating program. If I can maybe just go into a little bit of detail around that. Funding is the biggest problem so far. We have to date installed about 115,000 systems, which is below the target that we had intended to install over the previous year, because largely there is not enough funding in the system. As you might be well aware, the funding at this point is the rebate that is provided under the ESCOM tariff, which unfortunately is depleting very rapidly as the rollout increases. The fiscal is also another source of funding, and unfortunately we have not had enough funding to deal with that. So our focus, apart from the other issues at this point, is around addressing the funding issue. And in that regard, we do that through a mechanism called the standard offer, which is a process in terms of which we intend to leverage private sector funding, and then the money, or rather the capital, would be repaid through the electricity tariff. What has happened in that regard is that the regulator has already promulgated the standard offer, and there have been certain conditions that have been indicated by the Minister of Finance regarding the promulgation of a standard offer side by side with an energy efficiency tax incentive scheme, and the concurrence of the minister was conditional upon the introduction of SANEDI as the repository for certifying those savings that would have been made. As my colleague has indicated, SANEDI has since been institutionalized. We will be appointing the board this year so that SANEDI can then take its place, and consequently the standard offer program can then take the place or side by side with the rebate program as appropriate. Over and above the standard offer for solar water heating, there is also the energy efficiency and demand side management program, in terms of which we have allocated funding for 18,000 of these units. I think we're just trying to give an indication there just as to the level of funding that will be required for this kind of program. If I move on to the Integrated National Electrification Program, is that then I need to correct the typo there. Our target for the financial year in the threat plan is to 150,000 connections by March next year, not 170. As the DG has already indicated, we exceeded our target last year, but we do not want to overpromise. We want to rather over-deliver than over-promise. So the number there should be 150,000. That's what the budget is that has been allocated in that regard. Over and above the grid connections, the 150,000 grid connections, we're wanting to do some 10,000 off-grid connections through technologies that are not electricity based. It's mainly solar technology, solar PV technology, and we roll this out largely in concession areas where we provide electricity access for those areas that do not yet have any backbone infrastructure. Then, around the issue of the introduction of independent power producers, we have the regulations for new generation capacity that have been revised. And in terms of those regulations, we define the processes regarding how IPPs are introduced. Side by side with the IPP program, perhaps I should also indicate that the Independent System and Market Operator Bill, which has been approved by Parliament and will be introduced in, has been approved by Cabinet and will be introduced in Parliament, will augment the process to introduce independent power producers. Now, in terms of those regulations, the process defines a power purchase agreement, which we intend to conclude this year, as a standard set of documentation that would readily be accessible, perhaps even on the net, so that it becomes clearer to independent power producers how they would participate in the process. We also intend to launch a request for quotations, or shall we say RFQs, for different projects, in terms of which we would procure some of the projects or the programs indicated under the integrated resource plan. And our intention for this financial year is that we will have some of those power purchase agreements signed and the megawatts or the power plants being constructed. Side by side with the IPP program is the medium-term risk mitigation plan, which is part of the IRP, integrated resource plan. What the medium-term risk mitigation plan is really about is to try and address the short-term problem that we have before we do the NCCILE commission. As you are well aware, we have a very tight reserve margin situation at this point, and certain projects have been identified as being low-hanging fruit, so to speak, and the intention is to take advantage of those that would then balance the supply and demand. Those projects are largely non-ESCOM generation in gas, in co-generation, and some municipal generators to the extent that they can be rehabilitated would be included as part of the long-term mitigation plan. Energy efficiency and demand side management. In terms of where we stand at this point, is that we believe that some 1 terawatt hour in savings can be achieved and should be achieved in this financial year in the minimum, and we intend to achieve that in various in various ways, one of which is in terms of public awareness building. We will launch an energy efficiency awareness campaign in more earnest to complement some of the work that has already been done by others in the sector, particularly ESCOM, the 49 million campaign, but also the national business initiative, the energy efficiency program, that will be augmented through that campaign. Over and above that, we intend to conclude what we call the energy conservation scheme for large industry. The energy conservation scheme, you might recall, is the one in terms of which we would require certain large industrial users of electricity to reduce their demand up to a certain baseline. The difference here is that we would not prescribe the baseline, the companies themselves would prescribe the baseline, but be also mindful of the impact of reduced consumption on economic growth. So we're trying to address a problem that had been identified prior to this. The EDI, or the electricity distribution industry problem, has not gone away. Last year, a decision was made to shelve the program to create REV. However, the rehabilitation of distribution infrastructure is still a big problem. And this year, we will introduce what we call the Approach to Distribution Asset Management, or ADAM, the ADAM program, in terms of which we would like to identify some of the critical infrastructure in the metros as a starting point that is under severe stress, so that we can then make the appropriate interventions. And the interventions would require some funding, and the funding would be either tariff or fiscal allocation, or a combination of those two. We are currently in discussions with the various players within Treasury, Development Bank of South Africa, and also the World Bank in that regard. We intend to take this program incidentally beyond the metros and to cover the secondary cities in the next phase, and then ultimately to cover the whole country, because our premise is that as we increase supply, we're spending hundreds of billions of rand on supply, the whole distribution value chain has to be addressed as well, because ultimately it becomes the weakest link in the chain if left unattended. In terms of the, sorry, I think this is also the key thing on the next slide, so I'm going to go to the renewable energy feed-in tariff program. We intend to launch the refit program this year, incidentally next month. You will recall that we needed to get the integrated resource plan approved, which was done towards the end of March, and we believe that within the 2 months from March, we would be able to produce the procurement documentation for the different developers in wind, solar, biomass, small hydro, etc., those renewable energy technologies, to be able to make their offer. We intend to, just on the refit program, that we intend to appoint the preferred bidders towards the end of this year, and then to use some of these projects to showcase when we hold COP17 this year. So that is the current plan. But over and above COP17 showcasing, we believe that with the launch of the refit this year, we would be well on target to achieve the 10,000 gigawatt hours policy aspiration that has been pronounced in the renewable energy, in the energy white paper. In terms of the solar park, update on the solar park, the pre-feasibility study was completed with the assistance of the Change in Climate Initiative, as you are well aware. This year, we intend to conclude the feasibility study itself. This process has already started. In fact, all indications are that by around July, August this year, the feasibility will be done, will be completed. Side by side with the conclusion of the feasibility study is that an assessment has been done around the grid in the area. You might recall that at some point there was an issue around grid constraints. I think 100 megawatts was all that was available in that area, and we are currently in discussion with Eskom in terms of which we're wanting to increase or improve the ability of the grid to absorb even more projects. Incidentally, some of the refit projects indications are that they would be done in the Northern Cape, inside and even outside of the solar park that has been, or the area that has been earmarked for the solar park. If I move on to the IRP and ISMO, just to indicate how to confirm that after the conclusion of IRP 2010 by Cabinet and it was promulgated, is that we are now in the process of implementing some of those projects in the IRP. So, I think when we drafted this, the IRP had not been promulgated. Now it has been promulgated. And to implement those projects, as I've indicated, the ISMO, or Independent System and Market Operator Bill, becomes very critical because it levels the playing field, so to speak, between buyers and sellers and removes the conflict that Eskom, or the perceived conflict in relation to Eskom. Insofar as nuclear safeguards, we are investigating this year the possibility of the removal of a state system of accounting and control from NEXA in order to address again the conflict that one of the operators is currently playing when NEXA, as an operator is also responsible for that particular process of accounting. The issue around the nuclear transaction, the nuclear power station program, which is part of the implementation of the project under the IRP, we intend to conclude that this year in order to make sure that we are able to commission the power plant by around 2023. Otherwise, what happens is that we run out of time, and as it stands, we believe that 10 years would be adequate as timing from where we can make a decision and then implement it in 2023. This process will involve, will happen around a process that has been proposed to Cabinet, in terms of which a high-level coordinating committee of Cabinet members will be formed to deal with the issue. Just another point that is not on the slide that I omitted to mention, apologies, is in relation to the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute. You might recall that the Act has been put in place. There is a process with National Treasury in terms of which the institution is being listed, and it would then be activated or operationalized through the appropriate personnel that would then make it possible for us to deal with the matter of radioactive waste disposal. The issue around radioactive waste would then help to complement any nuclear program that we would put in place, from perhaps this concern about how we're going to deal with the issue of radioactive waste disposal. In terms of the legislation that we intend to introduce this year, I think this is slide number 68, and I'm not sure if you have it on or not, is that I think Michael Lynch has covered some of the legislation on their side. Certainly from our side is the issue of the National Energy Regulator Act that we intend to amend. This is the one that deals with NERSA. We intend to improve the governance arrangement by and large. Over and above that, we intend to bring certain amendments to the Electricity Regulations Act in order to align with those amendments in the NERSA Act itself. And as I already indicated, the Independent System and Market Operator Bill is in the process of being introduced in Parliament. Maybe just to conclude on the challenges that we face, we would like to flag the issue that I think Minister and DG have alluded to, which is financial constraints, which also impact on the human resources. But I think my position would deal with that.
Sorry, Mr. Ngoni, on the open press.
Okay, I just apologize, I have to leave. I need to leave because I have a disrespect, so that I don't agree with what's been said, but certainly we will hopefully get a later opportunity to engage with those issues.
Yes,
can
you? Right now? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to accelerate the pitch. Firstly, to deal with the presentation outline, I'll deal with the organizational environment, outlining the entire structure of the UOE that is currently being implemented. I'll quickly browse through the infrastructure structure, which could not be implemented because of the funding. Then deal with the lots of additional structure, as currently being considered for implementation in line with our current strategic objectives. Then, and I'll also deal with the performance output in terms of the business plan of public services. Chairperson, we are currently implementing the interim structure, the 52% that the DG has alluded to is in line with the interim structure. You will see that on your left at the top, we have implemented a hydrocarbons and energy planning, which is an old branch that was delineated from the old GME structure. And we are also a land function implementing electricity, nuclear, and clean energy, as suggested by Mr. Apan. The three support services branches you know, our new branches, that is corporate services, the chief financial officer component, and the chief operations officer component. This is the de facto structure that could not be implemented because of lack of funding, but, you know, we have already obtained approval from the minister and the concurrence of the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Chair, like the minister has indicated yesterday, we have revised our organizational structure to align it with our current strategic objectives and priorities following the outcome of our strategic plan that was held last year. And the intention here is to also ensure that there is service delivery as required by the South African Public Service. We have in the line function component the energy policy and planning branch, which will look at all policies and ensure that a planning for the country in energy related matters is taken care of. And then we have branch petroleum and petroleum product regulation. We have branch nuclear and as well as branch clean and renewable energy. The minister did indicate yesterday that this is a completely new branch that we did not have in, you know, in the de facto and the entire structure. We also have branch energy programs and projects, and this will also house, you know, the PMU unit, that is the project management unit, as well as some of the functions that, you know, will be inherited from EDI. The three chairperson are the support services components in the department. That is corporate services, branch financial and information supply management, as well as governance and compliance. This governance and compliance branch will also lie with the Office of the President as far as monitoring and evaluation is concerned, and it will also deal, you know, with a strategy and risk within the department, and will also have international coordination. Chairperson, these are the revised purposes, you know, of our line function component, you know, in the DG's office, you know, I must say, that office provides executive and administrative support to the department, and as far as energy policy and planning is concerned, we're looking at, you know, the purpose to develop, maintain and implement an integrated energy policy, you know, and the planning framework, and petroleum and petroleum product regulation. They will manage the regulation of petroleum and petroleum products. Nuclear, they will be responsible for the management of the South African nuclear industry, and clean energy, they will manage and facilitate the development and implementation of clean and renewable energy initiatives. And energy programs and projects, they will manage, coordinate, and monitor as well as report on any related programs and projects. Chairperson, I'll skip this. In as far as, you know, our focus areas are concerned, we will develop the HR plan and, you know, for the department, and this will be composed of the organizational structure that is aligned to the strategy, and we are required in terms of the Employment Equity Act to ensure that we develop and implement the Employment Equity Plan of DAOE. The minister has indicated that we are already moving at 60% female representation, which we are really proud of. Chairperson will also look at HR policies, processes and procedures, you know, as a department. We'll also have to identify the occupational categories for DOE. This will cover the areas such as, you know, those persons serving as energy officers, you know, as well as energy economists, which could not be catered for, you know, in the overall occupational categories by the Department of Public Service Administration. We'll also develop and implement an HRD strategy in line with the National Skills Development Strategy 3 that is being led by the Department of Higher Education. We are required to come up with a workplace skills plan, and then we have to ensure that all funded vacancies, you know, are filled in line with the cabinet position. I must indicate that we are currently moving within the 10% vacancy rate as allowed. We have to ensure, you know, good employer-employee relations in line with the Labor Relations Act and the resolutions that are being taken at GPSSBC level. We have to ensure that as a security risk management plan, it is being developed in line with the MIS document, and Chairperson, I must indicate that you know, the split of the department has coincided with the relocation of the Department of Energy to Travena campus, and we are required to ensure that we procure alternative office space for the department, because the current accommodation that we are having is really not sufficient for our needs. So we have approached the Department of Public Works to assist us in this regard, and the process is already at an advanced stage. Chairperson will also provide auxiliary services, you know, to the department, and at the regional office level, we also have to ensure that, you know, we provide our regional offices with the required office space. In some areas, Chairperson, we are, you know, experiencing, you know, some challenges because we are sharing these regional offices with DMR, but we are giving attention to that. We have to ensure that the DOE communication strategy and plans aligned with the national strategy, and we have to ensure that the DOE communication plan is being implemented with, in line with the strategy. And, you know, on a continual basis, we ensure that we assess the effectiveness of the strategy, and the intention this year is to also conduct, you know, a stakeholder satisfaction survey. And as the minister has indicated, we have to ensure that all lost calls on the presidential hotline are resolved within the given time frame. But I must say, Chairperson, we continue to maintain, you know, 100% a hotline resolved case status, and we also have to ensure that the energy building, both in headquarters and regional offices, are branded fully. Chairperson, in as far as legal services is concerned, you know, we draft, edit, and finalize legislation to be administered by DOE. We have to vet an international agreement in Chapter 5 of the Manual on Employment Act of 2006. We also have to vet the contract as amended, and we provide legal opinion as required from time to time, and we also ensure that all appeals lodged in terms of legislation, you know, administered by DOE, like the Petroleum Product Amendment Act, you know, and so on, are being handled. And we also ensure that litigation against the department is managed and action is instituted where necessary. You know, one of our, you know, our responsibilities is to ensure that the promotion of Administrative Justice Act, as well as the promotion of Information Act processes, are properly managed. Chairperson, I thank you.
Chairperson, mine is a quick and short one, and you do notice that most of the areas that you are dealing with, the Minister has made extensive comments on, as well as also part of what the issue has presented. So I'll skip slide number 63. On slide number 64, let's just briefly indicating what the Chief Operating Officer's Office is all about. One of our new components that was established late last year. mainly our key focus areas, just briefly on the strategy and risk management, of course, is the implementation of the government's new approach, planning approach, in terms of the outcome-based planning approach. We'll also be responsible for making sure that the department has got an effective risk management strategy and plan. Also, aligning of also our planning processes together with the budgeting process. The other area that we're responsible for also is the introduction of the department's monitoring and evaluation, which we didn't have in the past. This effectively is led by the presidency, where we should be reporting as a department on a number of areas, including the new outcomes that the minister has signed against. As far as ESSO is concerned, the minister has spent a lot of time on that in terms of what we'll be doing. The main area, of course, being the area of the group of companies. We're looking at the structures, we're looking at the legislation where needed, we're looking at the issue of removing some of the entities from under the same group of companies to be standalone entities as indicated on slide number 67. Briefly on the area of EDI holdings, as of the 1st of April, we had an administrator appointed within EDIH who is now responsible for the winding up process. And that process we are anticipating that it will be finalized by the end of June. But at the moment, we unfortunately have one case that is still in court, which is in terms of one of the suppliers of EDIH. So if we are lucky, it should be finalized by the end of June, but if it's not, it means our winding up process has to be extended to accommodate that. Also, in the areas of the personnel that belong to EDIH, they have taken the matter up with the CCMA because of the feeling that there was unfair dismissal in terms of their fixed term contract that they had signed. That process is under the CMA. Also, the other area of interest to some of the members in the past was the issue of what happens to the assets of EDIH. All the assets of EDIH that are still usable will be transferred to the Department of Energy, and then whatever is for disposal will be disposed under the EDIH Asset Management Program. But what we are trying to do as a department is to try and take as many of those assets as possible, because we do have a critical need of assets on our department. I've indicated some issues of the first group of companies, what needs to be done. On slide number 68, the Secretary of Planning has given us a response on the National Regulatory Disposal Institution, as well as the Act that we'll be looking at this year within the third group of companies. Under international coordination, I think you remember that the DG on slide number 12 did indicate the number of partnerships that you are having as a department, either in terms of bilateral or multilateral agreements that we have. This section is responsible then for making sure that we honor those partnerships that we are in. On page slide number 17, speaking closely about at the end of it all, the hosting of the COP17, something my colleagues have also indicated. I think, Chairperson, to conclude just briefly on slide number 73, which is the last slide of our presentation. Within the special program, the outreach project, I think all we can indicate there is that as a department, we do participate in a lot of intergovernmental or special programs which deal with the women, the youth, the children, and people living with disabilities. And in this area, we'll also be focusing on mainstreaming gender within the energy sector, working in close collaboration with energy sector groups that have been established, those would be your WINSAS, which is the Women in Nuclear in South Africa, your WINSAS, which is your Women in Energy, your Young Scientists and Youth in Energy organizations. Also, over and above that, we will be launching in August this year a Clean Energy Education and Empowerment Initiative, which will be an initiative that is focusing on the involvement of women specifically in the clean energy environment. It was announced yesterday with the minister's deputy minister's budget speech that our minister has been actually designated the clean energy
ambassador for Africa. So we'll be launching that in August in partnership with our SOEs, in partnership with other oil companies and any other interested groups within the country in the clean energy sector. This is one of our biggest projects for this year. Within the outreach projects that we'll be doing, we deal mostly in this area with youth programs, information sharing programs, and also, of course, with the other vulnerable groups. I think the major initiative that we'll be undertaking this year is the youth program. Because of funding challenges, we have cut down the number of programs that we're going to be having. We're trying to make sure that at least normally what we normally do every year, we have events where we get grade 9s and 10s all over the nine provinces, and then we divide them into two groups, and then we hold one week information sharing sessions in process with the terms of the issues of battery in carriers within the energy sector, all those kinds of things. But this year, because of the funding challenges, we only be holding one, unless we do get a good summary that can assist us with the funding. But what we'll be trying to do now, out of that, we'll be sending some information to the Department of Education just to give them the information of what has happened in the other areas that we could not reach. I think that will conclude all Jefferson and myself.
Thank you very much, Director General and your team, for that comprehensive report. Honorable members, you can access the ball is in your court. I've got a proposal to make that we give all our questions to the Secretary, she forwards it to the Director General, and we get answers before next week, Thursday or Wednesday, because we are a bit packed with time. Some of the members have got connecting flights, and we need to be sensitive. Although Friday is a working day at Parliament, but people are away from their families the whole week, and we need to be sensitive of that. So members, it is up to you. Before you go, Mabikari, let's just take that decision. Honorable Lees, Honorable Van Lingen, Abrams, and Michali. It's either we give us questions to the Secretary, she said forward it to the Department, and we get the answers by Thursday. Honorable Van Lingen?
Honorable Chairperson, we value and appreciate that offer. I think it's a good suggestion. We would just defer to the Department. We must have a reasonable deadline for our questions, like Monday morning noon or something like that, so that the Secretary can forward it on Monday afternoon and the Department has sufficient time to respond.
Marvely?
I'm in agreement, Chairman. It takes me 9 hours from the time I leave this room to the time I walk into my home, so yes, I do appreciate it.
Okay. Honorable Dehali? Is that fine with you? Honorable Abrams?
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. Honorable Dehali, you've got, have you still got 2 minutes to spare? Mm-hmm. Huh?
No.
Is it kindly told the pilot that he must wait for you? Honorable Dehali, you are excused.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. DG, honorable members, that is the arrangement. The Secretary, can we get a time frame? When would you email the questions through to the Secretary? By Monday noon? Honourable members, is that fine? Good. DG and your team, I made a promise last night to one person that you will be in Gauteng by 5, you will receive your guests, and you will treat your guests properly and nice. You see, this committee, we are very rebellious sometimes. We are robust, but we like to make love in this committee, not in the sense of, but we are lovely people, and we're understandable people. We're very sensitive to issues as well. So for you and your team, DG, thank you very much. For the members of Parliament, thank you very much for your cooperation. And we hope that you're going to have a lovely weekend and spend it wisely. Don't go jolling about. Remember, we've got a full program ahead of us. DG, you and your team, thank you very much also for the cooperation that we always receive from your department. And as I've said, whatever we can do in this committee to assist, we will definitely assist. We have made some arrangements with the portfolio committee that we will do our oversight on certain issues in respect of the INF program and the solar water, and we will take it further from the honorable lead.
Thank you. Just before we leave, it doesn't affect the officials, that in, but the Monday-Tuesday conference, are the arrangements in place? Will we hear about that, the details?
Yeah, the secretary will forward the details to us via SMS during the course of the day. There's just one slight change that we need to sort out. If members are going, everybody has to be back by Monday evening. We'll have to take the flight Monday evening to be in Parliament on Tuesday morning. So we'll just have the opening day and the keynote addresses of the ministers and the stakeholders. But DG, a last word from you.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Go well. I wouldn't say Rochelle, but go well. All the best. Keep the pastors the first in sight. And in conjunction with the portfolio committee, we will push the BRRR thing so that we can see how you can increase the budget so that you can deliver on what you said deliver. In actual fact, we have been to the IEC same thing soon. But I think there's just a little snag of that IEC center. But we will correspond to you in that regard. But all the best, and please go buy some food for the guests and see that the guests are treated nicely over the weekend. And all the best. God bless you, and have a safe trip home. Thank you very much. Honorable members, just Honorable Falimin, is there something else?
Do we have a meeting on Tuesday morning?
No, but there's keenery. And there's also other meetings like your Wokery and that meeting that's taking place. Is that all? Honorable Abrams, talk to me.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. But it's just that it's so confusing. We've made a arrangement because we requested the other day who came to remain and who's coming back every week. Now we're just looking for all this.
Well, as a politician, you have to take everything on a short notice. Am I right, Honorable Lee? Yeah, see you there. Thank you very much, members. Honorable Vitalana and the rest of the members, have a blessed weekend. And please go to church on Sunday morning before you proceed out on Sunday evening. God bless you. Have a safe trip home and enjoy the time with your family. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much. Spend some time with the family. Take them off. But we have to go via Roslyn now, no? Me and you. Take them off.
I want to.
What is it? You can't pass him.
Thank you.